go.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! This Friday on the Front Porch is brought to you by the Department of Better Late Than Never. It's 13 minutes past the hour. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com, available at said website by clicking Listen Live or by going to a wide number of other platforms. We recommend the Stitcher and TuneIn radio apps for your smartphone, as well as platforms like Dar.fm, Streama.com, available on Roku devices, and, of course, the podcast address is at whiterosesociety.org under the subdomain for this program. And you can get the podcast at iTunes. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And it is, 14 minutes past the hour. The show is live. It is the third day of May. And I'm not going to go into it. Just more weirdness trying to get the show on the air. But lucky for me, I've got a weekend to take the gremlins out behind the shed and give them a good working over. Nope, we're not buffering at all here, Jim. We've got things going out rather nicely. You might want to restart your player. Where to begin? Well, my first inclination is to share with you... Oh, by the way, well, let me do this first, since I didn't do it much last night, and, big thanks going out to Janie this evening for getting us started, and to James in Spain for helping us out, as well as to Marty. Thank you, Marty. And, of course, again, thanks to Jay for stepping up last night and pretty much getting us nearly, a big chunk of the fundraising done. Thank you, one and all. We will be trying to raise about another $75 between now and 9 o'clock tonight, and that'll take care of us for the week, I hope, and we won't be off to too disastrous a start for the month of May. Let's see here. Now, there was some news that broke yesterday, and after having mentioned it for on a number of occasions, I thought I should tell you. I mean, it might be good news. Well, it's certainly good news for a number of West Virginians. I received a press release yesterday that read as follows: Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, and yeah, that's still just a little bit embarrassing. Governor Earl Ray Tomlin joined by U.S. Senator Jay Rockefeller, President and CEO of United Health System Tom Jones, and CEO of Thomas Health System Steve Dexter, yesterday announced the decision to expand Medicaid in West Virginia. Governor Tomlin said, and it's just a pretty much ordinary press release except for the meat part, or the little, hackles raising up on the back of your neck part. We anticipate expansion will allow us to provide insurance coverage to approximately 91,500 working West Virginians, significantly reducing the number of uninsured. A decision to expand today, however, and see, this is the part. This is the part that has to go. If you've got a significant numbers of teabaggers, mouth breathers, knuckle walkers, snake handling freaks, people concerned that their Obamacare is going to turn us into a Kenyan socialist Muslim nation, you have to put this part in there. A decision to expand today, however, does not end our efforts. We must carefully watch federal efforts. If the program becomes unsustainable, particularly after 3 years, or the federal government changes its promised funding allocations, we must be prepared to take action to protect our state. You got that? Now, you know that the Medicaid expansion within the Affordable Care Act is 100% funded for the first 3 years. That's what that was about. If the program becomes unsustainable, particularly after 3 years, well, it's not going to be unsustainable for the first 3 years, Earl Ray, you freaking coal-fried genius, you. Because it's 100% paid for. And then I love this. Or the federal government changes its promised funding allocations. Well, the law says that the federal contribution to the expansion of Medicaid can never, as in not ever, drop beneath 90%. So at most, the state of West Virginia would have to come up with 10% of the expanded costs. Now, in light of the fact that, well, you know me, stories that don't seem to have any connection often do. And here's one of them. And I know, it's... There goes Bob talking about West Virginia like it's the only state in the union. Not really. What we are is a guinea pig. Yes, Texas Betsy telling us we Texans are still free to die uninsured. That's some freedom, that freedom to die. Yeah, I get it. Boy. So, a little thing slipped out onto the radar the other day. You know that what used to be Massey Energy was absorbed by an outfit called Alpha Natural Resources, right? And in order to make that saleable, Don Blankenship had to ride off into the sunset and hopefully wait for the day he's indicted. Well, Alpha Natural Resources issued its latest earnings report yesterday morning. And this is what they said. Alpha recorded a net loss of $111 million, or 50 cents per diluted share, during the first quarter of 2013, compared with a net loss of $29 million, or 13 cents per diluted share, during the first quarter of 2012. In other words, things are going from bad to dadgum worse. The year-over-year increase in Alpha's net loss is primarily attributable to lower per-ton realizations on metallurgical and eastern thermal coal, and lower shipment volumes of eastern and western thermal coal. Well, what it boils down to is Alpha Natural Resources stock is barely worth the paper that it's printed on. And they're getting ready to screw, blue, and tattoo Central Appalachia. Because, you know, when they go bust, they just kind of pack up the bags and, goodbye now! Yeah, good luck with the cleanup! Yeah, don't try to find us. We'll be in Brazil. No telegrams. No, you won't find us on the interweb tubes. We're disappearing now. I'm thinking this would be a lovely time to go ahead and drop the tax boom. Lower the tax boom on people like Alpha. Because you see, about that uninsured and disease-ridden, yeah, here in West Virginia? Well, the fact of the matter is, even though Alpha Natural Resources does not have to pay for the costs that it has externalized onto the men and women and children and into the bodies of the people of West Virginia. Even though they don't have to pay for those externalized costs, these dumb bastards still can't make money. Or so they would have you believe. Because if you drive by Alpha Natural Resources headquarters over in Virginia, you will not find Kevin Crutchfield sitting out there with a tin cup filled with pencils and hoping you'll drop him a dime. He is a millionaire scores of times over. And he's a millionaire because he has externalized those costs into the bodies of ailing West Virginians and Kentuckians. That bank account of his is a bit hemoglobinish, if you will. And so West Virginians do badly need access to the Medicaid expansion. But Earl Ray Tomlin says, we must be prepared to take action to protect our state. From what? Zombie health care seeking hillbillies? But that's the way it is here. You have to sort of throw a bone over to the poop-flinging monkeys. Okay, a banana. All right, stalk of celery. Whatever it is they like to eat. You gotta throw something over there to the poop-flinging monkeys of the teabag right. We must be prepared to take action to protect our state. Yeah, because all those Medicaid recipients are going to also be sent some of that, some of that ammunition that the Obama administration's been stockpiling to keep gun-owning, freedom-protecting, liberty-loving, awful gun owners. Jesus, it drives me nuts. We must be prepared to protect our state. Honest to God, I don't think Earl Ray Tomlin, if his brains were gas, he wouldn't have enough to fill up a piss ants motorcycle and run it halfway around the BB. Met him once. Felt like I needed to go take a shower immediately afterward. You know what's interesting, though, is that Governor Tomlin was joined by U.S. Senator Jay Rockefeller, President and CEO of United Healthcare System Tom Jones, and CEO of Thomas Health System Steve Dexter. That means that House Representatives member David McKinley, GOP, was not there. Neither was Republican Shelley Moore Capito, of West Virginia's 2nd Congressional District. She wasn't there. And neither was U.S. Member of the United States House of Representatives Nick Joe Rahal of the 3rd Congressional District here in West Virginia. They were getting their hair done or something. They just didn't want to be anywhere near that there Obamacare. Or he's going to destroy America. Bless his heart, Senator Rockefeller, who is on his way out, not running for re-election in 2014, which means that we will probably, I'll probably, starting January of 2015, start getting to say Senator Capito. Senator Rockefeller sounded the appropriate note. After Governor Earl Ray was done talking about protecting our states from the healthcare consuming poor people zombies, Senator Rockefeller, who still hasn't found it in his heart or conscience or wherever to actually overtly, openly mention the fact that the coal companies that he has so slavishly supported over the course of his career are actually killing West Virginians, but take your little victories where you can find them, I suppose. Senator Rockefeller said, one out of every four West Virginians, not strangers, but the men, women, and children we know from the playground, church, or the grocery store, That means the men are on the playground, the women are in the church, and the children are in the grocery store. No, stop it, Bob. Still do not have health insurance. Governor Tomlin has been working hard to close that gap because it affects everyone in this state in some way. And today I am so proud to stand with him to announce this enormous step forward. With the governor's careful stewardship of our state budget and the courage of his convictions. Now, come on, Jay. You're stretching it a little bit there, buddy. He got a permission slip from the coal industry is what it works out to. Earl Ray did. He is joining 22 other governors across the country plus the District of Columbia to help put an end to the uninsured. I think I would have phrased that a little bit differently. But that's me. Being a member of that group of which Senator Rockefeller is speaking, the uninsured, I don't want to be put an end to. Not yet. Not right now. Kind of busy here. But I understand what he's getting at. Medicaid is a lifeline for so many West Virginia families. It's affordable and efficient. That it is. It creates jobs and increases wages. Currently, a quarter of West Virginians count on it. 25% of the entire population of the state of West Virginia is dependent upon Medicaid. And that number would be significantly higher if Medicaid was available to people who lived in something more complicated than a cardboard box. Because if you are a single, non-parent adult and you own anything under the current system, you don't qualify. You too rich. And I read this next sentence as a little bit of a shot across the bow. You tell me. West Virginians deserve nothing less. Governor Tomlin's decision is based on the facts, and it's a good decision for West Virginia families. Now, Joe Manchin was not listed as having showed up for this this event, but he issued a statement as well. I appreciate Governor Tomlin's thorough evaluation of what he believes expanding Medicaid will mean to West Virginia. I respect and support his decision to go ahead with expansion in a way that is tailored to West Virginia. I will do everything I can at the federal level to make sure he has all the flexibility he needs. Oh, flexibility? How about money? No, flexibility. Flexibility is one of those funny words. It's one of those funny words that the oligarchs and the plutocrats and the one percenters use when they're trying to get their front feet into the trough, and once they do that, trying to get the back trotters in with them. Because, see, that's the part that made my pink little ears go, what the... What was United Health Systems' Tom Jones and CEO of Thomas Health Systems' Steve Dexter doing there? I'll tell you what they were doing there. In fact, I just did. They were working their front feet into the trough. Because this is going to be a windfall, especially if, like Arkansas and Florida, they get to do some privatizing. So that's kind of the news from West Virginia. I'm kind of happy. There is an outside shot that January 1st of 2014, I might be able to get some insurance again. I had a dog in this hunt, you see. So I'm going to cross my fingers and hope for the best. There's another study, and this kind of goes hand in hand with this issue. There's a study that came out yesterday, day before, and I had very badly wanted to make sure that we discussed it. Because I think this is fairly important. a detailed examination came out of Oregon. It was, in fact, a regional, a large-scale, randomized controlled trial. And the right wing will be beating on this in the future as a reason to say that people don't need universal single-payer health care. I'm just telling you, it's coming. Basically, what they'd meant, what it was an objective measurement of glycated hemoglobin testing, blood pressure, and cholesterol lipid levels. And what the study found, and this is where the right wing is going to pounce, is that generally speaking, there was no particular improvement in those health indicators, which are, well, simply put, limited in what they can tell us. But the other side of it is that when people do have access to health care, they utilize it. They use it. They go to the doctor. And their out-of-pocket expenditures go down. And within the study, well, there's unaccounted for stuff. Because even though, how to put this, those three elements that they looked at, blood sugar, blood pressure, and lipids, have to one degree or another associations with behavioral patterns. I, for instance, on a cash basis, we'll go next week for a fasting blood study, and we will look at my lipids and my triglycerides and my electrolytes. It's what plants crave. My liver numbers, my kidney numbers, my BUN, my creatinine, my blood glucose, all of that. And then when we get the results back, we'll talk. The last time we talked, the not a physician that I get to see suggested, for instance, that I add a statin drug to my medication mix. It was not financially crippling. It was one of those $5 formulary generic prescriptions, okay. But I have learned to be a little bit cautious with these folks. And I looked it up in combination with the drug that I take to manage my triglyceride factory, which I am, and lo and behold, found that the two could result in a rather severe and debilitating condition that, once it started, didn't stop. So I didn't take the statin, because I've got to keep the triglycerides low, because that's what causes my belly to blow up, and then I have to starve for a month, and right. Then it hurts like hell. But anyway, when the right wing starts blathering on about how this proves that everybody doesn't need health insurance, and they will, Megan McArdle over at the Daily Beast got the ball rolling. arguing that we're wasting money. Because, see, the right-wingers always worry about money more than they worry about people. We're wasting money by providing access to uninsured people because, sure, they go to the doctor, that's great. And, sure, their out-of-pocket expenditures go down. But their health isn't getting any better. But that's a behavior thing. Honest to Jesus, that's a behavior thing. Now, we all know that I am a meat eater. It would probably be wise if I was not. But as a meat eater, I am not necessarily anti-vegetarian. And so I was kind of pleased when I saw a news story yesterday that said, let me find it here, that a school, a public school in New York City had transitioned its entire lunchroom menu to completely vegetarian. Now, not completely vegan. I couldn't take that. I just couldn't. I mean, if I had to save my life, yeah, probably. But I am just a little bit of a, what's the term? No, an epicure. And that's not, and generally, people misunderstand Epicureanism in the Roman sense. They think it was somebody who just walked around drinking and eating and vomiting all the time. That wasn't it. The purpose of Epicureanism was to seek the greatest pleasure and do only things that yield pleasure and not pain. So that means necessarily that you would not sit and swill wine until you vomited in the gutters, but rather you would take it in moderation so as to have pleasure but not misery from it. So that's what I mean when I say I've got an Epicurean streak. And I like nice food. And I hate industrial food. Flushing, New York's PS 244 has about 400 students in it, between kindergarten and third grade. And if you think back to your own experience with school lunches, when you were that age, between, say, 5 and 8, did you really just want to sit there and chow down on a big old burger? Or were you like me and you loved things like gnawing on celery sticks and eating carrots and still am a carrot and raisin salad fiend. I can eat an entire bowl. I just love it. Carrots, raisins, a little bit of pineapple. Woof. Yeah, my mother had never had any trouble getting me to eat my vegetables. Mm-mm. Of course, that could have been because, well, the green beans were cooked with a little bacon grease in them, and, well, frankly, everything's good with bacon grease in it. Witness the fact that there's now bacon-flavored lip balm. But the reason I bring this story up is because it goes back to the Oregon healthcare research story saying that there's no marked change in or improvement in overall average blood sugar, blood lipid, and blood pressure numbers. These things are generational. For instance, right now in the United States, and you know this, we have a higher infant mortality rate than Cuba. We have a higher postpartum death rate than Cuba. I will warrant, however, or I will guess, that before Cuba got and I'm not using Cuba because it's some sort of ideological mecca to me, but rather because it points out the stark differences between an incredibly wealthy country that can't manage to keep babies alive after they're born better than a beleaguered island nation. That's why. But what I was going to say is, I would hypothesize that if you went back and you looked at the numbers before universal health care came in Cuba, that the postpartum death, maternal deaths, and infant mortality numbers were higher in Cuba than they were in the United States. It took a generation of universal single-payer health care there to turn that around. It will take a generation of people paying active attention to things like blood lipids and blood glucose and blood pressure for that to change. But the good news is, it can change. And if you start with a kindergartner and you show them that they don't have to always have some meat with their meat and gravy on it, not to say that that's not delicious, but if you give them servings of fruits and vegetables and nuts and whole grain breads, a generation from now, if those children continue to have access to health care in their adult lives, you will see dramatic changes in things like blood lipids, blood glucose, and blood pressure. If you can keep the child from starting to smoke, if you can keep the child away from booze, if you can keep the child in school and learning, then in a generation's time, if these folks in Oregon or their successors in interest replicate this study, the results will be significantly different. I mean, I was looking at what the lunches are. The kids love the lunches at PS 244 so much that they're going home and telling mommy and daddy they'd like to have it at home, too. That's nice. Of course, this also engenders the need to have the Monsanto GMO Frankenfoods discussion, because, as you know, if you're working hard on one end to drain the swamp and get rid of the snakes, and somebody's trucking the snakes in and putting them back behind you, it can get a little frustrating. And that's basically, you know, Monsanto is a snake trucker. Well, what do you mean you don't want a potato with a platypus gene spliced into it? Tasty. Really? Won't you please just taste this chocolate covered cotton, Captain Yossarian? Please. The kids love the vegetarian meals. The principal is Bob Groff, and he said we've had a really great response from the kids, but they also understand it's about what is the healthiest option for them. Because we teach them throughout our curriculum to make healthy choices, they understand what is happening and believe in what we're doing, too. The big thing I would like people to know is this isn't just about a vegetarian menu. It's about living a healthy lifestyle and educating students on what options are out there. I am sure, of course, that the right wing is absolutely convinced that this is part of an ongoing larger plot to turn us into a Kenyan Muslim socialist nation with FEMA re-education camps. Yes, Kevin, yes, I am live. Kevin says, are you live? Yes, I was listening, and when you turned off the replay of yesterday's show and didn't come on live immediately, I wasn't in a position to reset my radio on the computer, which if a station is silent for... Okay. So I need to write back, yes, I'm live. Thanks, Kevin. You know, back in the days of radio, you never had to reset your radio. That's one of those internet-y things. But it's a huge debate that we need to debate. What's the debate? I'm sure. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the K Street lobbyist for the American Meat Association, the conniption he's. Remember how mad they got at Michelle Obama when she wanted to plant a garden and not use Roundup on it? By God, the American Industrial Meat Association about had a straight up conniption. But it's Friday on the front porch, and we have lots and lots and lots of stuff to talk about. All of this tie-in between health care and the externalized costs of people poisoning us and the generational need to teach, to educate. Well, it at least provides a little bit of room for optimism. These are not insurmountable problems. You know, toward the end of the show last night, I was talking about the question of whether or not this can be formally referred to as a failed state. Well, if you ever needed inspiration for trying to back away from that abyss before it stares back, there you have it. We can teach children to live healthier, make healthier choices, and have demonstrably better lives. Meanwhile, the response of the right wing is, actually, we were planning on giving the 5-year-olds rifles. No, really. I had a note from Jim prior to showtime. He said, Houston, we really have a problem. 70,000. I can't even speak. Jim wrote, Houston, we really have a problem. 70,000 of them at the NRA Clavern. And at this point, I don't think Jim was using the term Clavern facetiously or overly broad or over broadly. Grammar is an ongoing struggle. Because really, you know this, right? You know that really and for true, the National Repiglick and Rifle Association has selected as its new president a pustle-gutted redneck cracker by the name of Jim Porter. He'll be the new president of the National Repiglick and Rifle Association. And if the guy, I think he becomes actual president of the NRA tomorrow, and if he takes his oath of NRA office holding shipness in a freaking white sheet and a pillowcase hat, and they start referring to him as Grand Kleagle or Noble Lumpkin instead of President, I won't be a damn bit surprised. He is, of course, as noted, from Alabamistan. This is Jim Porter in 2012 speaking to the New York Rifle and Pistol Association. Get the popcorn.
NRA was started 1871 right here in New York State. It was started by some Yankee generals who didn't like the way my Southern boys had the ability to shoot.
My Southern boys. Notice the use of the term in 2012, which my poor, poor, meager mathematical skills tell me is 141 years ago, 2012 to 1871, as Yankees. I get letters. I get emails. Some of y'all think that I'm kidding when I do my cornpone accent and start talking like this. Listen to this guy. Yankees and how our Southern boys could shoot. Yeah, them Yankees got the asses whooped, and they decided they had to learn to shoot better next time. Oh, Jesus. It's just like that memorial in Texas that Dr. John told us about, where it puts up the number of killed and wounded between the North and the South. Well, yeah, but we won on the statistical side, ain't no doubt about it. God damn. Now, let's go back and get all of Klegel Porter's remarks back in 2012.
NRA was started 1871 right here in New York State. It was started by some Yankee generals who didn't like the way my Southern boys had the ability to shoot in what we call the War of Northern Aggression.
You got that? Har, har, har! The War of Northern Aggression! Only thing is, he still calls it the War of Northern Aggression. And so do a lot of them. And I got to pondering on this last night, even before the news broke of Klegel Porter's ascension to the highest office of the National Republican Confederate Rifle Association. When I was growing up, I used to hear a lot of Southern folks, Southern men mostly. Southern women were not prone to such discussions. They were talking about their lane cake recipes and so forth. That's sexist. It was also a very sexist time. But I heard time and time and time again, and this is the era of the rise of George Wallace in Alabamistan, I heard, the South will rise again. And as a child, I thought that was crazy. As a child, I was already learning history. As a child, I had already been to the Shiloh battlefield that has such places, and all the little boys always want to see it right first time they go there. They want to see it right off the bat because they want to know if it's still that way. They wanted to see the bloody pond. Because on those 2 days of the Battle of Shiloh, or Pittsburgh Landing, the water in that one lone pond turned blood red from all the blood in it, put there by dying men who crept and crawled as best they could to get one mouthful of water before they died. Shiloh was the real wake-up call to the nation. The first battle of Manassas, the first battle of Bull Run, had been troubling enough to the North, because you must remember that hubris infused federal supporters rode out with their ladies in their carriages to watch those rebels get the ass-whipping they so rightly deserved. Only it didn't quite work out that way, and the Northern Army wound up retreating right through all those carriages, and the whole thing was a bit of a mess. That was bad enough. But in April of 1862, when the Confederate Army, led by Albert Sidney Johnston, ran up against the army led by Ulysses S. Grant and inflicted horrific casualties upon the Union Army at a cost of horrific casualties of their own. By the end of those 2 days fighting, after which the Union did emerge victorious, after those 2 days of fighting, it was suddenly the entire nation suddenly realized that they had gotten themselves into something that they had no idea what it was going to be like. Because casualties on both sides of the Battle of Shiloh exceeded the combined casualties of the American Revolution, the War of 1812, and the Mexican War. Exceeded them combined. A lot of people get misty-eyed at Gettysburg, and rightly so. Those rows upon rows of headstones at Shiloh and the monuments to places like Minnesota and Wisconsin, Illinois and Iowa are sobering in their own right. War of Northern Aggression. Yeah. Except for the now there's an open question which is worse, lying to someone else or lying to yourself. When you call it War of Northern Aggression, aren't you lying to yourself? Isn't Jim Porter lying to himself? Because I'm pretty sure that it was Pierre Gustave Toutant Beauregard who ordered those young Citadel students in Charleston, South Carolina, to fire upon Fort Sumter. Unless we're going to have a Fort Sumter truth movement now. Yeah. Back to you, Kleagle Porter.
Generals who didn't like the way my Southern boys had the ability to shoot in what we call the War of Northern Aggression. Now, y'all might call it the Civil War, but we call it the War of Northern Aggression down south.
No, we don't, Peckerhead. Speak for yourself.
But that was the very reason that they started the National Rifle Association, was to teach and train the civilian in the use of the standard military firearm. And I am one.
Standard military firearm. So that means what? The NRA wants to teach the civilian how to use the standard military firearm of today? Does that give you the creeping horrors? Some friend of Kleagle Porter's out there walking around with a military-grade automatic or semi-automatic rifle? Protecting freedom? Yeah, I think I'm going to get me one of them crickets for my little baby. Teach them to use a standard military firearm quick as they can heft one.
Who still feel very strongly that that is one of our most greatest charges that we can have today, is to train the civilian in the use of the standard military firearm.
Wait a minute. I was kidding. He's not. I am one who still feels very strongly that that is one of our most greatest, yes, they say that in places like Alabama, Stan. Our most greatest, we do like our superlatives, charges that we can have today is to train the civilian in the use of the standard military firearm. The standard military firearm. Gee, and I thought their magazines were named American Rifleman and American Hunter. I guess they do want to go out and stalk Bambi. Standard military fight. But why? Why, Kleagle Porter?
So when they have to fight for their country, they're ready to do it.
Is the NRA proposing a draft? Are we all going to go to militia meetings now? Because I think I'll join Walt Whitman and go roll bandages somewhere for these dumbasses after they're done shooting at each other. But wait, because it's a damned onion. It's a Ronco commercial. But wait, there's more. Let's make sure we get the context. Don't want to take this puzzle gutted mush mouth freak out of context.
Have today is to train the civilian in the use of the standard military firearm, so when they have to fight for their country, they're ready to do it. Also, when they're ready to fight tyranny, they're ready to do it. Also, when they're ready to fight tyranny, they have the wherewithal and the weapons to do it.
You got that part? There we go with the fighting tyranny bullshit again. Also, when they're ready to fight tyranny, they're ready to do it. Whatever that actually means. Also, when they're ready to fight tyranny, they have the wherewithal and the weapons to do it. This man, in those words, in 2012, suborned treason. I'm convinced. I'm absolutely sold on the idea that we have to start referring to these NRA freak shows as what they are. Treasonous, anti-Americans. They don't get to define this country. This country is not little more than the Second Amendment. Fight tyranny. Whose tyranny? French tyranny? Italian tyranny? Oh, wait a minute. I got it. Kenyan tyranny. Yeah, Kenyan tyranny. You know how I know that? Because at this self-same event where he's talking about when they're ready to fight tyranny, they have the wherewithal and the weapons to do it. During that same speech, he referred to President Obama as, and this is a quote, a fake president. Now we have lots of problems with President Obama. I, for one, am not fond of being on his list of people who are who, should they live to be 65 or 70 years old, really don't need to do so much useless eating. Chained CPI, austerity. This guy wants the NRA to train people to use the M16, the M4 carbine, or maybe even the other carryable by hand weapons. Grenade launchers, anybody? Or maybe how about this? A machine gun.
Marshal again, and I've got the video you've been asking for a while. I've got the M249 SAR and the 150 rounds of anti-personnel, and we're going to fuck up a bunch of bottles, and then I've got some explosives, and then we're going to back way the fuck up over there, and we're going to shoot the propane tank, so...
Going to shoot some propane tanks with a machine gun. Yeah, we're going to back way the up over there. Yeah, I'm glad to know that. Obviously, it's in English, but this guy is Russian. Mostly, we're doing this for the sound effects.
Let's see what we can do.
You got that? He's going to back up and cause mayhem. Now, this is a SAW M249 machine gun. It is a standard military firearm. The kind of thing that Kleagle Porter wants to put into the hands of everyday Americans. The outgoing president of the National Repig-Lickin' Confederate Rifle Association is David Keene. For reasons that positively, utterly, and absolutely escape me, David Keene was invited to speak at Harvard University. Your guess is as good as mine. At Harvard University, David Keene, outgoing, and I don't mean that he is personable by saying that, I mean he's leaving office, David Keene said that fully automatic weapons, you know, like the M249, he said they should be illegal for civilian use. Kleagle Porter, on the other hand, apparently believes differently. Now, take a moment. You heard all that. Maybe that doesn't give you the chills. It gives me the horrors. Because think about who is going to want an M249 SAW. How about people like Mother Lanza, the doomsday prepper, who had turned her home into an arsenal because she was pretty sure that those people were going to come for her food and her guns because the culture is on the verge of collapse. And they'll leave the cities and begin wandering in zombie-like hordes, and the only hope we have is to mow them down before they can get within range of us. Imagine that thing being legal. Imagine Adam Lanza being able to take that to Sandy Hook Elementary School, which, in point of fact, the National Republican Confederate Rifle Association, I think we have to add Confederate to their name now,
want people to be able to do. And see, dig this. Understand. If something like this, if the wet dream that this firearm is for the NRA ever became legal to generally own in its fully automatic function, they would fly off the shelves. The manufacturer would not be able to make them fast enough. The ammunition manufacturer would have to bring on extra shifts and expand the plant. Because we have a culture that we are dealing with now that has what I think the mental health professionals, folks like Horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner, would call a suicidal ideation. In addition to treason, that's what that means. When 44% of people responding to a survey who self-identify as Republicans say that in a couple of years' time it's going to be necessary for there to be armed rebellion in this country, it is a suicidal ideation. And heroes that they are, understand, they're not going to line up in some sort of order of battle and go marching off to a place like Shiloh or Gettysburg or Cold Harbor. They're going to snipe. And being the treasonous cowards that they are, they're not going to shoot at people who can shoot back. They're going to prefer the unarmed because they are treasonous cowards. Let's get back to our Russian friend here.
Okay, so sorry about the wind noise. I've got my propane tank set up at about 150 meters. I'm going to shoot the tracers into it. It's going to be a lot.
You have a nice day, too. Why don't you stay where the hell you are? Welcome to the reality of 2013. I guess the question is, what do we do? What do you do about it? And my answer is, I have no freaking idea. But it has become obvious that there is a contingent of people who want to tear this country apart, who want to destroy this nation. Consider this. Beth sent this along just moments ago via Facebook. Bob Kincaid on Facebook, BOBKINCAID, at Bob Kincaid on Twitter, by the way. Apparently, Glenn Beck's getting his apocalypse on. He is apparently, again, kind of working that word, I know. He says that God must destroy the United States. And if that's the case, then someone has to be God's agent, don't they? Driving home this evening, I was listening to National Petroleum Radio, and I heard a story all about how a little camp for children in the state of West Virginia that's run by the Salvation Army will not open this year and will not serve the little children that it usually sends to camp to teach them to sing Kumbaya and make little leather change purses and so forth, because they don't have enough money, and because the camp is badly run down with broken pipes and termite infestation in the cabins and so forth. And the first thing that came to my mind was, why does the Salvation Army have a money shortfall when they're in the God business? Shouldn't God? Why did God allow their camp, at which maybe they do good work? Why did God allow that to fail? Why won't God let a few hundred low incomes go to camp this summer? Well, it's because somebody has to step up and act on God's behalf, because he may be the all-powerful creator of the universe, but he can't do things like write checks. Someone has to be the hand of God. The Beckerhead is that hand. You see. And as the hand of God, the Beckerhead is also concerned about the shooting that took place in Houston. You heard about that. Person committed suicide and said, "There is a monster in me." There's a race on, and I mentioned this a couple of years ago, maybe three, who knows how long ago. There's a constant race on between right-wing idiots to out-idiot each other. If, for instance, Alex Jones says that the Boston Marathon bombing was a false flag FBI operation, and that there's some sort of paid-off amputee sitting in a hospital bed to make it look like they... Because, you know, they were calm and everything. We talked about this last night. Well, then Glenn Beck, whom Alex Jones says has been stealing his shtick, then Glenn Beck has to come up with his own false flag operation. And pretty soon you're in a, I don't know, a false flag race. Here's Glenn Beck.
Went into the airport here in Houston just about an hour and a half ago, and fatally shot himself to death. He had an AR-15 with him. He was at a security checkpoint, Houston International Airport. Reports indicate the body was found in the lobby of Terminal B at the airport. Houston police say an air marshal at the field fired at the suspect, missed. Man then dropped the AR, picked up a pistol, and shot himself. That's what they're reporting now.
This is going to take a couple of minutes, so just bear with me. Don't send me the hateful email saying we don't want to hear him. There's a reason for this. I don't just do things. Yeah, Marty. Shooting propane tanks with a machine gun, isn't that usually worthy of a Darwin Award nomination? Well, ordinarily it would be, Marty, except this guy moved way the F back. But anyway, back to the Beckerhead. because see, I've got another story that, of course, dovetails with this. They always do, don't they? You got to wait for the punchline.
That doesn't make sense to me. Now here's what my
wait. We got to go back because when the Beckerhead starts talking about what doesn't make sense to him, it usually requires that we try to make sense of what the Beckerhead doesn't make sense, and well, it gets a little confusing and makes your brains feel a little bit like warm bubblegum on a hot on hot pavement on a summer's day.
An air marshal at the field fired at the suspect, missed. Man then dropped the AR, picked up a pistol, and shot himself. That's what they're reporting now.
By the way, for the benefit of his mouth-breathing, knuckle-walking, this is a live audience thing, and he's standing in front of this stuff that looks like stained glass. He's really got that whole... who's the character from fiction? Oh, well, anyway, he's got that whole apostle, you know, preacher thing going on. Because when he talks about the guy shooting himself, he uses his thumb and index finger to put it under his... Yeah. You ever wonder if he thinks about this stuff? After all, suicide runs in his family. And he puts the index finger up under his head and pulls the imaginary trigger. Thanks for the visual, Glenn. Man, they love their eliminationism, don't they?
That doesn't make sense to me.
Okay. So it doesn't make sense to him that a guy with an AR-15 was seen by an air marshal who then responded, and the guy dropped his AR-15 and decided to blow his brains out instead. That doesn't make sense to the Beckerhead. Why ever not, Glenn?
Now here's what my sources are telling me, along with my opinion on what...
Okay, his sources and his opinion. We're going to have to separate these out. His sources, of course, are the people who are communicating with him through his flashlight from the satellite via, oh Jesus, Planet Kolob.
But we should.
His opinions, however, are merely the things that are said by the voices in his head. You and I would have a hard time differentiating between the two, but the difference is clear as a bell, to the Beckerhead.
To me. Now here's what my sources are telling me, along with my opinion on what we should be looking for. I have been looking and fearing moments like this. If it's not this one, it will happen in the coming days. My law...
Prophesying. Preach on.
Enforcement sources here in Houston are...
My law enforcement sources here in Houston, of which there are mathematically how many? Yeah, none. His law enforcement sources here in Houston are strictly swimming about in the thin gray settlings between his ears that pass for brains.
Telling my team that this...
His team? What is he, the Cubs? No, he's the Astros. Wait, he gets paid more money than the entire Astros roster. Never mind.
This man is from out of town. He is staying at a hotel. The police are now searching his hotel room. His intent, according to my sources, was to take...
Okay, before we talk about his intent, a little commentary on the video. I realize it's like dancing about architecture, but we got to do it anyway. A couple of times, the camera has panned the audience. I don't mean they gave him a bad review, but has looked out over the audience. Anybody want to talk demographics? Sure, why the hell not? Old, white, and scared. I didn't see any new Black Panther Party jackets in the audience. Back to your sources, Glenn.
That this man is from out of town. He is staying at a hotel.
Imagine that, a guy from out of town staying at a hotel. Why this guy isn't working is why Glenn Beck isn't working. Well, I mean, it's because it's the government, right? He's practically... This is CSI.
Police are now searching his hotel room.
Well, I'll be damned.
His intent, according to my sources, was to take out as many people as he could at the airport with an AR-15. First of all, the idea that this is a coincidence, that this is happening at the airport with the NRA, while they're having there, is too much to believe.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's too much to believe for someone whose the paranoid fantasies are set off by the electronic eye that opens the door at the, you know, at the A&P. It's too much to believe. There are no coincidences.
If I were a journalist, well, let me correct that. If I were an honest journalist.
Well, thank you, Glenn, for putting the modifier on there, because you're not a journalist, and you're damn sure not honest, but by gold now, right?
I would be looking for these connections.
Oh, listen to all the old terrified white people a-clapping. They's a-clapping because he said if I was an honest journalist. Because, you know, there aren't any. But we give the for-profit media as hard a time as anybody. But really, the little goobies are clapping because he said if I was an honest journalist. Let's hear that uninterrupted by Bob.
If I were a journalist, well, let me correct that. If I were an honest journalist, I would be looking for these connections. Look.
Clap, white people. Clap. Oh, look, they're clapping so good. Look at them. Fine motor skills they got there. Oh, my goodness. Clap, white people.
For the connections of who this man is and any connection he might have to the Uber left.
Uber left? Uber left? How about the any left? What left? To the barricades! Hell, I don't even... I can't even whistle the Internationale! The Uber left. Represented by whom? Noam Chomsky? George Soros. Oh. The Tides Foundation that you tried to get gunned down, Glenn? And yet you're still walking around uncharged? Uber left.
I believe that, and only because I have been looking for this, I believe this man could fall into the category of somebody who has lost his job, is depressed, etc., etc. Somebody comes in off to the side, winds him up, says, oh, you should make a statement. You should make a statement. I believe that's probably, I shouldn't say that. I believe it is a very good chance that that's what happened.
Even though there's no evidence to suggest it whatsoever. He believes it, that settles it. Whew. Mother. But see, the fact of the matter is, there are people who wind people up. There are. We just had audio from one of them. Legal Porter winding people up, telling them that it was a war of northern aggression and that he wants Americans ready to fight tyranny. He's priming the pump. There are people winding people up, like the Cricket My First Rifle manufacturers from Keystone Arms. You know, the sooner your toddler knows how to handle a firearm, the sooner they'll be able to protect their liberty and their freedoms from the Kenyan Muslim socialists who want to take him off to the Obama FEMA re-education camps. God.
He then gets to the airport. He...
Oh, wait, let's get the whole windup. Here's the windup, and here's the pitch.
The side winds him up, says, oh, you should make a statement. You should make a statement. I believe that's probably, I shouldn't say that. I believe it is a very good chance that that's what happened.
And you know what? He speaks from experience. Glenn Beck personally wound up the guy who went to shoot up the Tides Foundation. Of course, Glenn had no way of knowing that the guy was a real noodle case and would need a fifth of rot gut to give him the courage to go and do it. Remember, his mama said, oh yeah, he's been listening to that Glenn Beck. Oh, wrong accent. He's been listening to that Glenn Beck and watching that Glenn Beck. And he's concerned about what the Tides Foundation's going to do to America.
He then gets to the airport. He realizes, it's pretty clarifying, I would imagine, when you kill people. He realizes that's not who I am. He shoots in the air, drops the AR. The air marshals come. He realizes there's no way out. He shoots himself. If I were an honest journalist, I would find out where these guns came from. Were they purchased or were they illegal?
Oh. Where's the terrified white people clapping? Maybe the applause sign wasn't on.
Oh, if they're illegal, I could guarantee you this is...
Okay, here, this really is the payoff. We got to hear the whole thing.
Marshals come, he realizes there's no way out. He shoots himself. If I were an honest journalist, I would... find out where these guns came from. Were they purchased or were they illegal? Oh, if they're illegal, I could guarantee you this is a setup. Someone knows history.
I know history. I know lots of people here in the Horn family commune that know history. If they're illegal, I could guarantee you this is a setup. Someone knows history. Oh, do tell us about that history, Glenn.
Would find out where these guns came from. Were they purchased or were they illegal? Oh, if they're illegal, I could guarantee you this is a setup. Someone knows history. I do. At least I know enough history to know about the burning of the Reichstag.
Oh, Jesus Christ. He went there. He really, really went there. A person committing suicide at the George H.W. Bush Houston International Airport is the same thing as the Reichstag fire. Well, Glenn, I know some history too, and I even know a little bit about the Reichstag fire. It's not the same thing. It's not even, I mean, some of these things belong together, but one of these things does not belong, and that's the Reichstag fire. Great googly moogly. Now, the right wing has hissy any time that one of us mentions, oh, the history of the mid-20th century. But they get a pass. The Beckerhead especially, because he knows history. Right? The Reichstag fire. And this guy says that God is just going to destroy the... United States. Merciful. And again, 44% of Republicans and 29% of Americans generally think that there's going to be armed rebellion in the United States in the next few years. And we wonder why we're in the mess we're in. Oh yeah, Reichstag fire. But apparently there's a little case of Lewis Black referred to as Hitler Tourette's going around. For some reason or another, the folks over at Chicken Noodle News had the notion it would be a great thing to have a blood-soaked former spokesman for George W. Bush, Ari Fleischer, on to talk about Guantanamo Bay. He knows, Ari thinks he knows history, too. I heard once that Ari Fleischer said that his parents are liberal Democrats, and moments like this, you have to think that Mr. and Mrs. Fleischer are sitting home saying, where did we go wrong? How did he wind up like this? I will mention that Ari Fleischer is Jewish. I mention that because of this.
I want to broaden this for a second about why we have Guantanamo in the first place.
No, we have it.
We have it because
of your administration.
These people do not even follow the rule of war. Let alone the rule of law. It's not a question of whether...
Okay, no. There was some crosstalk there. Christiana Monpour was getting a little bit uppity. So they're talking about Guantanamo Bay, and Ari Fleischer's all up about, you know, rules of laws of war.
We have Guantanamo in the first place.
No, we have it.
We have it because
of your
people do not even follow the rule of war. Let alone the rule of law. It's not a question of whether or not we should be trying people in civil court, military commissions, both of which are legal and within the Constitution, congressionally passed. These people didn't even wear military uniforms. They engaged in battle against America as terrorists, violation the laws of war.
Right,
that's why Guantanamo got invented
now,
in the first place.
This country fought Adolf Hitler, and I don't really believe that that...
Now, this is Jeffrey Toobin, CNN legal analyst. He's going to provide the grist for Ari Fleischer's mill.
...country fought Adolf Hitler, and I don't really believe that Osama bin Laden and his group are worse or more dangerous than Adolf Hitler. And we managed to defeat Adolf Hitler by following the rule of law.
And so
I don't see
Hitler's
why
armies.
Why
they
did we have
the law
to...
of war. They wore uniforms and they fought us on battlefields. These people are fundamentally totally by design
I
different.
Don't
and
believe
they need to
that for
in a different
second.
Extrajudicial
I don't
system.
Believe that for a second.
You got that? Ari Fleischer declared that the Third Reich, the Nazis, you know, Zyklon B, Bergen-Belsen, Auschwitz, Sobibor, Dachau, those Nazis. Ari Fleischer, on a national cable television for-profit network, declared that the Germans in the Second World War followed the law of war. They wore uniforms and they fought us on battlefields. They did. They did wear uniforms. Rather snappy ones, I must admit. They followed the law of war. In the cold and snowy reaches of December of 1944, American soldiers who had surrendered, having been overrun by the onslaught of what would become known as the Battle of the Bulge, were machine gunned to death after their capture by the Wehrmacht, the German army. That is expressly against, as Captain Fluellen says in Henry V, the law of war. That was not war, that was murder. But then again, when you get into that kind of hair splitting in the midst of war, as opposed to the state of peace, yeah, it gets a little messy. You can, if you are a right winger, apparently say anything and get away with it. Glenn Beck says that a guy committing suicide at the George H.W. Bush Houston International Airport is just like the Reichstag fire. And then Ari Fleischer says, that the Germans obeyed the law of war in the Second World War. Let's see. I've just got a brief list here. Malmedy, that's what I was talking about, December 1944. Le Paradis, May 1940, British soldiers of the Royal Norfolk Regiment captured by the SS and subsequently murdered. The Wormhout Massacre, British and French soldiers captured in May 1940 by the SS, murdered. Massacres d'Ardennes, June 1944, Canadian soldiers captured by the SS and murdered by the 12th SS Panzer Division, Hitlerjugend. Gardelegen, Oradour sur Glan, Calavrita. And of course the general standing order issued by personally by Adolf Hitler in 1942 that said that any allied combatants encountered during commando operations should be killed to the last man. Take no prisoners. Bis auf den letzten Mann niederzumachen. Didn't even matter if they were going to surrender, trying to surrender, whether they were armed or unarmed. Has there been an outcry? Has there been an outcry from the Anti-Defamation League? Because if ever there was a moment for one of those, this would be it. This is where they are. One part of the right wing wants to convince the country, not us, that what? The Uber left? You know, any Uber, really? Uber? Are winding up terrorists. And then a member of the Bush administration, the George W. Bush administration, who, if there was any actual justice in this world, would be standing at a war crimes trial in The Hague, damn, I didn't mean to filibuster for an hour and a half. My apologies. It's 13 minutes before the hour. This is Friday on the Front Porch. You know, we could have a little conversation if you want to. The Skype line is open, Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. The phone lines are open, 304-658-3333. It's easy and, I hope, fun. So by all means, since this is the last broadcast of the week, jump right in. This is Conversation Radio on the Horn. Janie has kindly gotten us started this evening with fundraising. If you would like to match her kind contribution, it sure would help things out a whole lot. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. Don't know much about geography. Don't know much trigonometry. Don't know much about algebra. Don't know what a slide rule is for. But I do know what if one is two. And if this one could be with you, what a wonderful world this would be. Now, I don't claim to be an A student, but I'm trying to be. For maybe by being an A student, baby, I can win your love for me. Don't know much about history. Don't know much biology. Don't know much about a science book. Don't know much about the French I took. But I do know that I love you. And I know that if you love me too, what a wonderful world this would be. La ta 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 ta. History.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Sitting here chuckling. No, not about anything that was in the filibuster there. I just saw a tweet that came through from Sandra to Isaac and me. Oh, my God. White men wearing Google Glass. Sandra asking, oh my God, where is that maid from Being There When You Need Her? You know, the one that said, white people crazy. Yeah, I'm going to post the... Well, at least I think I am. I'm going to try to. Copy. And where'd my chat window go? Oh, well, that crap happens. Hey, well, thanks, Ed. Thanks for jumping in and helping out with what Janie got started. And James and Marty. Thank you. Thank you very much. Oh, well, my chat window just disappeared. I guess you you'll have these things. Let's go to the phones. Like I said, 304-658-3333, Friday on the Front Porch. Hey, welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Bob.
Hey, Kevin, what's happening?
Not much. I'm going to have to read something very light before I go to bed tonight, because if I don't, I'm going to have nightmares.
Did I? Oh, there I go triggering again. I'm sorry.
And you're not triggering. This guy with the NRA is triggering. I'm scared. I mean, I don't know what else to say. Good Lord.
This may as well be a Confederate secession convention as far as I'm concerned.
Well, yeah. That's what it sounds like. I mean, if I hadn't heard that clip on your show, if I'd heard it somewhere else, just listening to it, not knowing it was an NRA convention.
No, to be fair, that wasn't the NRA convention. That was him talking to the New York Pistol and Shooting Society in 2012.
Well, just knowing it was, not knowing it was the New York Pistol and Shooting Society, it's just amazing to me. And I don't know if you caught it in the news, I think you mentioned it last night, about how South Carolina is wanting to do the nullification of Obamacare.
Oh, yeah. Listen, nullification is popping up all over these stand states like dandelions after a spring rain.
Yeah. And who would have ever thought after 1865 that we'd hear that word again? I mean, good Lord. And can't, like, what you just said a minute ago about apparently the right can say anything they want. I'm thinking with what Glenn Beck said and with what this guy said and what a couple other people have said this week, there ought to be some people being arrested right about now. You know, if it were you or I that said that, being on the left, Fox News would be on their lead story. So, you know, go get them now. Don't bother with it.
Well, to be fair, we might not make Fox because our skin tone is wrong. But remember, Sean Hannity is still having a baby over the non-existent new Black Panthers.
Yeah.
I mean, can you imagine if there had been a few of those new Black Panthers sitting there amongst all them white folks?
Oh, yeah. Well,
I mean, this is just a humorous little aside, but I just played, you know, Sam Cooke's What a Wonderful World, because it has that line about don't know much about history in it. That's the way an old DJ's mind works. But I couldn't help remembering that was also in Animal House.
Yep.
You remember when they go off in search of and find the roadhouse where Otis Day and the Knights are playing? And they'd hired him to play at the fraternity party, and that worked out so well. And so they just walked into the bar.
Yep.
And they were the only white folks in there. Remember the guy who comes up to a couple of the fraternity boys and says, "Mind if we dance with your dates?" Yeah. And the stricken look on their faces. Well, that's what that entire Beckerhead audience was.
Yeah.
Sorry, my brain just works that way. I just had this delightful vision of some new Black Panthers sitting in the audience there with listening to Glenn Beck talk about how people are winding up killers from the Uber left. God, you'd almost pay to get some, just to see that happen.
Yeah, well, I'd pay to see an Uber left. You know.
Well, there is that, isn't there?
I'd pay to see a left. I'd pay to see a...
Yeah, never mind the modifier. Just any left.
Yeah, yeah, anything with left in it. But, I don't know. I just wanted to call and kind of verbalize this stuff because it's just so damn scary. You know, I've said to myself for a long time, and I've said it on the air a couple times, I foresee us having some kind of civil war by 2050. I'm currently revising that to by 2020, if not sooner.
I don't think it works out that way. I've come to a conclusion that it will not be the stands that split this nation up. I've thought a lot about this, and yeah, this sounds, Texas Betsy pointed out a little bit earlier, you're sounding rather paranoid tonight. Well, not trying, it's just how it works out, but...
You've been listening to Beck too much, Bob.
Oh, well...
That's what it is, it's rubbing off.
Oh, dear. Well, I saw a guy with a gun on his hip at the grocery store today, too, and that didn't help. Yeah. Well, honey, I'm going to strap on the peacemaker. I got to get bread and peanut butter. Anything you need? Oh, don't forget the laundry detergent. Oh, then I better take the 44 Magnum instead of the 357. Yeah, Jesus criminy! But anyway, no, she said I was sounding a little paranoid, and I don't intend it for it to be that way. But I have thought about, because I do sit around thinking about possible futures, and I got to wondering if maybe at some point. The normal, and I use that term advisedly, Kevin, the normal states are going to will split off and just leave the remaining tottering hulk of what used to be the United States to the stand states to do with as they please. You know, California, Washington, Oregon, New York, Pennsylvania, Illinois,
and leave.
Yeah, all of New England. Down to maybe Maryland.
Yep. Hopefully Colorado.
Well, you're kind of landlocked. It'll be difficult.
Yeah. I don't know. I foresee, I don't expect it to be a North-South Civil War either. It's not going to be that kind of thing.
Well, no, there's never going to be one of those everybody line up wearing the same suit on one side and everybody line up wearing a different suit on the other and have at it. That's not going to happen. And that's one of the things where perhaps we, by virtue of our national experience, misunderstand what civil war means.
Yep.
A lot of times it's people who don't have nice uniforms like R.A. Fleischer is fond of. A lot of times it's just people shooting at, and like I said, when it comes to treasonous people, they like to shoot at people who can't shoot back.
Right.
Think about Quantrell's Raiders during the Civil War, or think about what went on out in Missouri, or what you know Mosby's Raiders. You know, those guys were just thugs.
Yep.
And they had such a good time of it during the Civil War that they decided to try to keep it going afterward. Hello, General Sherman. Oh, look, what a lovely Ku Klux Klan you have there.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I'll make the prediction. It'll be before 2020. I don't see how we get to 2015 without some sort of major national incident taking place, because all the people with all the guns and all the crazies, one of them is going to pop a cork, or a group of them are going to pop a cork.
Well, they're working on it now. Mentioning the NRA there, Kevin, consider this. You know, they're having their little clavern down in Houston. And even after this child shot his 2-year-old baby sister with his kiddie rifle, the NRA was down there in Houston, some vendor selling an NRA kids crayon t-shirt. Our buddy Dennis in Kentucky sent this along. Or an NRA baby bib with the letters N, R, and A on innocuous little blocks.
Yep.
Let's see. There was a shooting magazine with a child on the cover holding a firearm. Mossberg was there displaying its youth model firearms.
Yep.
Now, those are youth model shotguns, youth model rifles. Oh, and look, there's one that's pink.
Yep. Yeah, it goes back to what you were talking about last night. When you were talking about that last night, I thought of my own experience, because I grew up with guns and grew up in a family. Everybody had a gun. And my father started me out, if I remember right, with a single shot BB gun, and I graduated to an air, one of those pump-up air BB guns, and then I graduated to kind of a BB gun rifle that, you know, had something resembling a clip in it kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? It
yeah.
wasn't a rifle. Good Lord. You're giving a five-year-old a rifle? I just... And you're asking for trouble. How many... I can't count how many times as a kid I shot myself with the BB gun playing around. I never shot myself on purpose, but you know what I'm saying? I shot at something and it ricocheted and hit me, that kind of thing. I think of myself...
Yeah, and see, I mean, everybody's seen A Christmas Story, you know, the great Gene
right,
Shepard-based film. You, you'll put your eye out, kid. Well, you know, that's apparently the late 1940s in Indiana, although it was shot in Cleveland. That's the late 1940s in Indiana when what parents feared were if their kid got a Red Ryder BB gun with a compass in the stock, they'd put their eye out. In 2013 America, where we've gotten dumber, we have to think about kids killing their baby sister with their child-sized 22 caliber, real, honest-to-God, no-kidding rifle.
And it's how do you go to sleep at night if you're the CEO of Mossberg or that other company that was selling them? And like you said last night, how do you not go quietly to some barn somewhere and hang yourself knowing that you caused the death of a two-year-old child?
That's what the liquor's. That's what the liquor is for, Kevin.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And it's just so upsetting to me. I expected more out of our country growing up. You know, when I was 18, 19, I had no idea this is where we'd be in 2013. I thought we would take a completely different path than what we took. Even with Reagan in 1980, you never thought this is where we'd end up. And, of course, large portion of that credit goes to Mr. Cheney.
Talking about earlier, I'm deadly serious about. You know, they used to say the South will rise again. And like I said, I thought that was crazy, and I went off on that historical digression, but I didn't finish the thought. And this is the thought, Kevin. They were right. What we thought was crazy talk turned out to be the truth. The South has risen again. And frankly, there is at least a plurality, if not a majority in this country, who agree with a hell of a lot of the craziness that spews out of their mouths. Protecting freedom and socialism on and on and on, Kevin.
Yeah. And I get to go home to that in the next week or so. And I'm going to be asked to move back home, I know. And I can't do it. I want an out if something does go down. I don't want to be trapped in that situation down there. It's gone completely past what I can tolerate. You know, the weather's good, the people are nice, the normal people, but the crazy Obama craziness has just touched people in the head or something. I don't understand it because, you know, we have our complaints with the president, but these people are complaining about him for all the wrong reasons. And I have no problem, you know, didn't even think about the man being black, you know, when I voted for him, other than the fact that it was an historic thing. And yet, people, you know, what if we'd have got Joe Biden as president, or Al Gore, or John Kerry? I don't think we'd be here today.
Oh, I know. With Al Gore, we wouldn't be. But bear in mind. But bear in mind the treasonous right would still be the treasonous right. We've had them. We've had them, Kevin, since the 1960s. You know, with the John Birch Society.
Right. But in the 60s, the John Birch Society was thought of as the fringe right. Now they're the mainstream.
Right. Yeah.
And that's what really bothers me, troubles me. I'm not going to live in fear. I'm not going to go out and fear for my life every time I go out the front door. But I tell you, I am going to be a little bit more in tune to my surroundings and everything else, because just like that guy in the airport yesterday, you know, there's crazies out there, and they're being emboldened by guys like this NRA president and by Glenn Beck, and why that man is not in a sanitarium, as they called it in the old days. Why he's not in a loony bin somewhere, I have no idea. The man is going to seriously... He's going to lose it on air one day. He really is. He's just going to, you know, like the old cartoon with the guy, you know, how you do it, the blah, 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 blah kind of thing. He's going to do that one day. But until then... They're coming out of the woodwork the following. And I can't believe it. That's the thing. I just can't believe we're here. I can't believe that there are people this crazy in our country.
And see, Kevin, I take issue with you in referencing them as simply mentally ill.
Oh, I don't mean they're mentally ill. No, they're sane. They know what they're doing.
Because that lets them off the hook entirely.
Right, exactly. When you're mentally ill.
Mental illness is deserving of both treatment and sympathy and empathy. Right. Because there's an element of there, but for the grace of God, so to speak, you know. Goes John Smith.
Right.
But no, what we are talking about here, and just because they haven't come completely out in the open and said it, although they're getting very, very close, is that they want to overturn the fundamental structure of the government of the United States and replace it with something more to their liking.
Right.
Remember that the Confederate States styled themselves A, as states, B, as a new nation, and C, as the proper interpreters and legitimate heirs of the framers of the Constitution, and in fact, of the Articles of Confederation.
Right.
And that's what we see again today.
Right.
We see a right wing that is creating an interpretation of the idea of government that is the only one that is legitimate. Any idea that that government should be capable of picking up the trash, they disagree with.
Right.
To a certain extent, they disagree with paved roads.
Right.
If the government does it.
They forget about the fact that without those paved roads, they didn't build their business. You know,
I mean, to this day, there's still some loopy mine equipment or whatever company on the road from here to Beckley that has a big sign up by their fence that says, "We did build this."
Yep.
Yeah, because they built the road too. Yeah, built the sign.
Yeah,
good
right.
for you. But the fact of the matter is.
You know,
go ahead. I'm sorry.
Can I ask? Would it be the suggestion? Yeah, but I'm wondering if one day, having Dr. Bill on your show to specifically discuss some of these things that are happening now, where there's some interaction between him and you and the callers, because I'd like to ask him, and I can't say it's one particular thing, but as it, you know, when you get into the flow of a conversation and you talk about they claimed that they were the proper interpreters of the Articles of Confederation and how they're doing that today. Well, you know, I'd like Dr. Gill to be able to kind of comment on what it was exactly back then. You understand what I'm saying? I'm not doing it
well. He's addressed some of that stuff over the course of the years. Of course, it would be difficult to go and I suppose it would be difficult to go and search. But one of the things that he pointed out that really blew my mind at the time is that the Articles of Confederation, what we know looking back, is the interpretation of the Articles of Confederation that were put forward by the forces who created the Constitution.
Right.
Now, that is, by definition, a biased position, because history is written by the victors. But the fact of the matter is, the Articles of Confederation were not necessarily failing. What was happening is that actual democracy was breaking out all over the place, and the people who controlled the money at the time were rather disturbed by that.
Right. And
so if you listen to Dr. Bill, what he will explain is that the Constitution is actually not an attempt to enshrine democracy or to advance democracy, but in fact, Kevin, to curtail it.
Right.
And that is why I get a little purple in the face every time I hear some prattling politician from Barack Obama on down talking about our democracy, because we do not have, we never have had, and there is no sign that we are going to have actual democracy in this country anytime in the foreseeable future. That's why I say, Kevin, that in the case of the United States, democracy as such is strictly aspirational.
Right. And always has been.
As far as I can tell from where I stand, yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's a good thing, in a sense. Well, by that I mean, with the Constitution, it puts boundaries.
Well, there's nothing democratic about the Constitution, Kevin.
No. But what I'm saying is it gives you a set of rules, if you will, to live by. This is how our United States government works. Article 1, Article 2, Subsection A, etc. And without that...
Well, what they did is they put together something and they said, okay, future, here's a framework. Good luck with it.
Right.
And they created a process for amending the document as needed.
Right.
And so, you know, that puts the lie, for instance, to people like Fat Tony Scalia when he says that the Constitution is dead, 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 dead. Okay. Because he means that if the framers couldn't envision it, and you have to crawl around in their heads and try to figure out what they meant, which is a sort of psychological masturbation exercise as far as I'm concerned, that you interpret the Constitution by standards set forth in the late 18th century instead of interpreting the Constitution based upon the realities of whatever century one happens to be in.
Right. It's like the well-regulated militia part of the Second Amendment.
Right, or what Kleagel Porter was talking about when he said he wanted the NRA to teach Americans to use military-style weapons.
Right. Yeah. You go off and use your military-style weapons. I'd rather do without them, thank you very much. I hate to use the word, it's a living, breathing document. But it's certainly something that is forever, or should be forever, being updated. I don't think we need a constitutional convention.
No, that scares me to death.
Right, yeah, because of where we're at. But
the Constitutional Convention, brought to you by Carl's Jr.
Yep.
Yeah.
And financed by Karl Rove.
Oh, or the Koch brothers.
The Koch brothers, yeah.
And probably broadcast on ESPN. We're back at the Constitutional Convention, brought to you by Day 2. Yeah. The Koch brothers are on the clock.
Special appearance by Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, and Glenn Beck. Hey, Kevin, it's good to hear from you. I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Yep, thank you, Bob, and I'll be able to listen to you a couple days next week, so I'll have a good vacation. Like I said, I might try to call in.
By all means, do. You know, just let all of this stuff blow past you and find some relaxation time.
Well, that's the scary part, is like, I don't know, because of where I'm going, I guess is a good way of putting it, I can't. And that's why I'm a little, feel a little bit of trepidation about the trip, because as much as I'd like to be with my family, I see what's ahead and don't want to be there, don't want to get stuck there. And that's a pretty bad thing to say, Bob, that you've got to make that choice. But I want to make that choice now, while I've got a choice to make, instead of not have a choice to make, if that makes sense. You know, I just, I want the ability to visit them as much as I can, but I can't live down there. It's just, it's gone beyond what I can stand. And, you know, with the Zimmerman trial going on down there too, all of it is just so scary. So, you know.
Yeah, it might be.
Look, I will enjoy it. There will be parts I'll enjoy, but I do feel a little bit of trepidation in making the trip. So
I could understand it. Well, good luck to you. Make the trip safely, and keep us in the loop and let us know you're okay.
I will do that. And, you have a good week yourself, Bob.
All right. Take care, Kevin.
All right.
Bye now. From Colorado Springs, that's our buddy Kevin. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Do you mind if I dance with your date?
Yeah, you saw the movie too. Hey, Jim.
Mm-hmm. You know, maybe I'm a little jaded here, but none of this surprises me at all. Because how many times have I said on this program about history? History is cyclical, it is repetitive, it is nonlinear.
And so we're just looping back around.
And what makes you think this country is going to be here in 50 years or 100 years? I mean, nations rise, nations fall. Nations come together, nations are torn apart.
And I think my personal theory, Jim, is that technology speeds that process.
Certainly it does. It's a definite accelerator. And, you know, the social media and all the other things that are transfixing people into various states of polarity, I mean, you know, that's just the way it is. And I said before, I kind of feel like Louis Caz.
Après moi le déluge.
The state will last by rain. After me, the fall. He saw it coming.
Sure, I think because he recognized the realities, recognized his present realities.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And as far as this business about these people being mentally ill, no, I don't think so. I mean, Adolf Hitler, in my opinion, wasn't mentally ill. He may have been sexually disfigured by certain things, as was, you know, documented by the OSS report done by Walter T. Langer. But he wasn't crazy. He was just stupid. And, you know, mental illness, I could deal with that and with empathy and sympathy. But stupidity is something I have a hard time dealing with. Very much so. I mean, if Hitler had any sense, he would have had Russia and the United States fighting each other.
Yeah.
He could well have done it. But he was just stupid. Just absolutely stupid to hide behind that crazy-ass stuff that he believed in and was such a gambler. And even said that I walk around with the assurance of a sleepwalker. And that sort of reminds me about some of these people that you've been going on about tonight for 2 hours. They basically walk around with the assurance of a sleepwalker. And they're driven hither, thither, and yon.
So, Jim, you think there's no danger to be had from them?
Oh, well, there's danger. Bob, look, there's danger everywhere. You cannot leave your house and go from point A to point B and be 100% sure that you'll return.
Of course not.
Well, that's just, you know, basic logic to me.
But it strikes me as something more fundamental. It strikes me as fundamentally something different, Jim. When 44% of registered Republicans say that they're ready to do armed rebellion, on who? Toward what end? You see what I'm saying?
Well, what about 1860, 1865? You had 11 states decided to do that.
I know that, and that's why I have coined this phrase and have taken to using it a little bit more often lately. A cold civil war.
Yeah. Well, I think you've been sort of correct about that.
I mean, when the NRA is out there saying that people should own fully automatic machine guns. I mean, for instance, last night I was talking about this Pennsylvania company that marketed these rifles to children with which a 5-year-old killed his 2-year-old baby sister. And even mentioning that just fills me with a sense of horror and dread. Let me make something abundantly clear, Jim, and not necessarily to you, but just to ponder. Ever since this story got some traction across the country, now, I cannot offer this as fact, but based upon past practice, I can almost guarantee that those kiddie rifles have flown off the shelves. Because that is part of the paranoid mindset that the NRA has fostered in this country. We're in West Virginia, both of us, Jim. After Sandy Hook, after the Newtown Massacre, Walmart could not keep AR-15s in stock. They sold like sliced bread.
Well, what does it tell you? It tells you that they're marketing a very popular, viable product that is being purchased by misguided, stupid people. And probably half the ones who bought those weapons at Walmart or wherever, probably half of them don't have a pot to piss in or a window to throw it out of.
But, you know, that's the thing in this state that I've learned just by talking to
people.
Are you
sure I'm moving here? I think you're wrong. I don't live here. Actually, I've been lying to you all this time.
Oh, okay. Calling from a secure, undisclosed lake location on Fire Island?
No, Provincetown.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah, it's the wrong season, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, you know, P-Town, well, never mind. Go ahead. You were making a point.
No, I was simply saying that...
Bitch.
I was simply saying that firearms in this state, which is a very, very poor state, are liquid. They're more liquid than gold. You know, if you've got a bunch of guns laying around, you've always got access to some money because there's always somebody out there in this state that will buy your guns.
Well.
And that motivates a lot of this BS fear about, well, you know, I don't want to have to do a background check just because I want to, sell, you know, I need a little ready cash and I want to sell a shooting iron or two. And with regard to your assertion that those people are morons, Marty just wrote in, Jim, and said, well, yes, but they're well-armed morons.
Aren't they always?
I just saw a posting here in the chat room, Jim.
Aren't they always well-armed?
They
generally are. I mean, you know, based on my understanding of history, yeah, they are. They're morons, and they're well-armed morons, yeah. Right on, Marty. Well, point well made.
Rick Santorum addressed the NRA convention today, you know, that 70,000-member clavern you referenced in your email.
Mm-hmm.
And he said the NRA are warriors and declared that the Second Amendment comes from God. And the rest of his speech was apparently, according to what Lottie's put in the chat room here, the rest of the speech was an attack on President Obama, gun control activists, the French, Europe, Obamacare, the decline of religious institutions in America and Europe, among others.
You know, I've never seen any reference to that in my prayer book.
I don't think it's in the Book of Common Prayer.
No, it's not.
Because
not the Bible either.
Yeah, true.
But, I mean, you know, these people are just...
Yeah, take up thy M16 and follow me is not in there.
Yeah, well, I mean, these people are just absolutely stupid, and they're... And basically what they're doing, in my opinion, is they are out to make a buck.
Some of them are.
Most of them are. Sure they are. Of course they are. People who sell these things, the people who buy them and sell them to other people without proper, you know... credentials and stuff like that. Yeah, they're out to make a buck or something. I don't know. I just am not really surprised too much at anything I hear, see, or whatever. I mean, you know, I don't like it as far as the Constitution is concerned. I'm still under oath to protect and defend it. But I can see it being changed in the not-too-distant future. Because it's not necessarily intended to last forever. I mean, nothing that is contrived by man or built up by man or whatever is going to last compared to the whole cycle of history.
Well, yeah, and when you were talking about that, I know you're familiar with Joseph Heller's monumental work, Catch-22, right?
Yeah.
Do you remember when Nately is talking to the old Italian man? The old Italian man says, Italy will survive this war and still be in existence long after your own country has been destroyed. Nately could scarcely believe his ears. He'd never heard such shocking blasphemies before, and he wondered with instinctive logic why G-men did not appear to lock the traitorous old man up. America is not going to be destroyed, he shouted passionately. Never? Prodded the old man softly. Well, Nately faltered. The old man laughed indulgently, holding in check a deeper, more explosive delight. His goading remained gentle. Rome was destroyed. Greece was destroyed. Persia was destroyed. Spain was destroyed. All great countries are destroyed. Why not yours? How much longer do you really think your country will last? Forever?
We have no inoculation against that type of destruction. None.
But see, there's a big difference between the conversation that you and I are having, Jim, versus, say, Glenn Beck declaring that God will destroy the United States.
I don't think he has to really do a whole lot. I think it's quite frankly, it's doing enough to itself.
Right, but
it's not God doing stuff like this. It's the people who are here
who think that they are manifesting His will.
I mean, I don't know about that. I mean, they say they are, but I'm not exactly sure about that either. But I mean, it's just the nature of the course of humanity and anything.
Systems evolve and devolve, and as Kate says, chaos is always self-correcting.
Well, yeah, that's a good point. My kudos to Kate, because I agree with her totally at 100%. Absolutely. It's really kind of nuts, and it's getting nuttier and nuttier with the passage of time, and to tell you the truth, with the South having grown up there, you see, maybe a lot of your people who have never lived in that part of the country aren't used to this type of talk and stuff like this. But I've heard it all my life.
Precisely my point when I was growing up hearing, the South will rise again.
I mean, you know, I had every member of my family several generations back were in the Confederate Army. Hell, one was a major general. Now, how do you think I grew up?
I got a pretty good idea.
Mm-hmm. Taught a lot of things and, you know, understood a lot of things. And y'all know that type thing. Yes, ma'am. No, ma'am. And then I began to realize, you know, some of this doesn't ring quite true.
And so, you even
referenced my alma mater. Citadel cadets were the ones who fired on the Star of the West.
That's true.
On whatever in April in 1861, under the command of
E.G.T. Beauregard.
General Beauregard. So, I mean, you know, I've been immersed in this all of my life. So this is why a lot of this simply doesn't surprise me, or the activities of people who live in these areas of the country are the way they are. This simply hasn't emerged. It's always been there. And it's not going to go away.
Until they get their way.
Well, I don't know about that, because I think what's going to happen to them is that's, you know, the same arms of self-destruction against which they are trying to arise will engulf them.
Well, this latest round of nullification, really, like I said earlier, nullification is popping up all over in various different forms. We saw it here in West Virginia with the legislature's attempt to nullify federal standards regarding mine discharges of selenium. We see it with regard to guns. And now, lo and behold, your native state, South Carolina, has passed a nullification law regarding so-called Obamacare.
They don't have to enforce it.
Well, no. What they've said is that if the IRS penalizes a South Carolina citizen for not purchasing insurance via the so-called individual mandate, that South Carolina will then provide a tax deduction in the equal amount. It's nullification. So, you know, it'll go to court. The South Carolina legislature will have probably cost the people of South Carolina a cool $500,000, and they'll continue to sit there and prattle away about what fiscal conservatives they are.
Well, it's just amazing what the operational definition of fiscal conservatism is. You know, some people will, you know, I don't know. What phrase am I trying to find? They are penny wise and pound foolish. They really are. But I mean, I just am not too surprised. And I've already said that once before, and I don't really think I have anything else to say other than the fact that it's something that's always been there. And having a black president, that's something they don't like. Obamacare, something they don't like. And a number of other things.
Right. So the first time they started out by trying to keep him from being president, then they tried to keep him from being reelected, And now their focus has shifted to make sure that there is never another one.
Well, they've never really gotten over civil rights and the movements of the 60s.
No. I don't know if you saw or heard the story, but a couple of weeks ago, there was a bit of a dust-up over the fact that a Georgia high school still has a segregated prom.
Well, you know, if that's what they want, let them have it.
Well, I can't go there, Jim. There are some things that are so odious in this country, you know, segregation in public schools being one of them, that it really can't be tolerated.
Well, I mean, what I'm saying is, if they're willing to do this off campus and it's a private thing, you know, that's their business. Let them do it.
It's their business if it's not being done with any state funds.
That's exactly what I just said. Didn't you hear?
But off campus doesn't mean no state funds.
I didn't say that. I said off campus, and I will, you know, you made that addendum, and I will reinforce that addendum without any state funds, period. But I mean, if that's what they've got to do, then there's not a whole lot you can do about it. That's my point. I mean, you can sit and trumpet all you want to about this, that, and the
other. No, they can be sued. The lawsuits were used quite effectively toward that end.
Well, good luck with that back in that period.
No, I'm not talking about that. No, I'm talking about now.
Well, anytime, you know, I mean, there's just certain things that people are going to do that they're just going to do, and there's not a whole hell of a lot that you can do about it. That's what I'm trying to make. Now, you can agree to disagree or whatever, but that's just the way I feel about it. I don't like it, but I have the sense enough to realize that people are just going to do what they're going to do what they're going to do. And there's some points where you can intervene and should intervene, and there are other times when you've just got to look and say, you know, intervention is just pointless. It's just the nature of the beast and the nature of going back to what I said when I first came on the line, other than the quote from Animal House, you know, it's the nature of humanity. And the lack of humanity. It's a cyclical, non-linear item. Well, look, I've said all I need to say.
All right.
So you go find Otis Day of the Nights and tell him I said hello.
Oh, and by the way, I have to tell you, you might find this little bit of trivia interesting, Jim. Marty wrote in and said, he said, did you know that Universal wanted John Landis, you know, the director of Animal House, to delete the Otis Day and the Nights dance club scene with the, you know, Mind If We Dance With Your Dates, because they were frightened of black people tearing down the movie theaters. So then the producers showed the movie to Richard Pryor, and he said he thought it was funny. And the scene
Richard
stayed
Pryor,
in.
Being Richard Pryor, obviously, you know, I love Richard Pryor. I think he was wonderful. God bless him, you know, and I love his sense of humor.
He was originally intended to be cast as Sheriff Bart in Blazing Saddles.
That's right, yeah, he was.
But that casting choice was nixed in favor of Cleavon Little because Richard was deemed a little too threatening.
Well, I think Cleavon Little did a pretty good job.
Well, he did.
And Gene Wilder did, too, and... you know, it was just a funny movie, and Mel Brooks is up.
And it tapped, you know, as is often the case with great comedy, it tapped a lot of truth.
Of course it did.
And meanwhile, as opposed to truth, you know, there's Glenn Beck, who thinks that a guy committing suicide at Houston's airport is just the same thing as the Reichstag fire.
Right. You know, there's something else I want to bring up, and I hadn't thought about it. I did the other night, but... as far as kids growing up today and things of that nature and the things that they're going through, or young people, I would refer anybody who hasn't seen it to that film called The Breakfast Club.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Very good acting. A lot of changes were made. A lot of, you know, a lot of stuff was just done free, out of the script. And had a fantastic soundtrack to it, too.
Oh, I can never hear the theme song without getting all misty-eyed.
Well, the end of it, too, the love theme from it, is absolutely beautiful. You can find it. I've got the CD as well as the movie, but the love theme is just beautiful. It really is.
Yeah, and the other thing I went back and rewatched recently, because I enjoy the film so much, is Blade Runner. When Rutger Hauer delivers that, like, Tears in Rain monologue, it just, it's another one of those moments where you can use a stand-in for all of common humanity and have it make profound impact.
Let's face it, we all have a termination date. And whether it's by the Tyrell Corporation or whomever, you know, it's just the very nature of the beast. Things come and go, and nothing, absolutely nothing, is absolutely guaranteed of any type of realistic immortality, in my opinion. It's the way things are, and such is the institutions of mankind, you know.
Here, here.
So you just, you know, you live while you can live, do the best you can, and treat your fellow man the best, the way you'd want to be treated, and when you're not, you're just going to have to realize it's just the way people are. You know, humanity in a certain way is a frightening entity. And in my opinion, there's simply too many of us on this planet.
Well, there's no getting around that. But, Jim, have yourself a wonderful weekend, and hopefully we will talk soon.
You too.
All right.
Night.
Bye now. Jim, who is not calling from West Virginia, Provincetown, back to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. This is Angelo from the People's Republic of the Bronx.
Oh, hot diggity, Angelo. How you doing?
I'm fine. Listen, I wanted to put to rest some of your concerns about the dummy Republicans out there fomenting treason.
Okay.
The first thing is that if you look at where they are, where are they going to get their bullets from? I mean, they can have all the arms they want, but most everybody knows that you have to import your bullets from Japan and from China. So the minute hostilities run, you know, start up.
Wait a minute. Are we not making our own bullets anymore?
No. Remember, most of the armaments that we get nowadays are NATO bullets. So what are they going to do? Now, here's another thing for you. You got a U.S. Army that knows tactics as well. Let me ask you a question. Who do you think started the first concentration camps?
Us?
No.
No?
Well, yeah, sure, the Indians and what have you. But the first time it was used as a tactic were the English in the Boer War.
When true,
the Boers couldn't be caught out in the veldt, they just rounded up the children and the wives, and they put them in camps, and the guerrillas came back out and surrendered. What do you think the United States Army and the United States military is going to do the minute those guys go back into the woods? That's going to be it. So Glenn Beck can say whatever the heck he wants to say all this time, what have you. He can hype them up, but when it comes right down to it, they just don't have the numbers. It was the same numbers that allowed President Obama to be reelected. There's just not enough white people or angry white guys in order for them to prevail in the election, period.
I think there's a great deal of truth in what you say. Like I said, I'm not concerned with people out there lining up in one suit of clothes against people in a different suit of clothes. I don't think we're ever going to see the likes of that again.
No.
But what I am concerned about, and, you know, please bear in mind, Angelo, that I didn't, you know, I never wandered around in a state of water-boweled terror over some 6'6" tall Saudi Arabian with a portable dialysis machine who hated me from Pakistan or whatever. It didn't work for me. But I do get a sense of dread when I walk into a grocery store, when I go to Kroger's, and there's a guy with a pistol on his hip because he feels so paranoid, so freaked out, and so utterly insecure that he can't go and buy a loaf of Wonder Bread without bringing the peacemaker.
Now, I ask you this. Who does he pose more of a threat to, you or himself? Think about it.
Existentially, I feel like I don't know that I can quantify what the percentage degree of risk is, but the fact of the matter is, everybody who's on the other end of that pistol is at risk, aren't they?
They certainly are, but they're more at risk to themselves than they are at anybody else. I'll put it to you this way. I live in a city where there are Crips and Bloods. That's the honest truth. But more honestly, I'm more afraid, if anything, they're not going to hurt me. They're going to hurt themselves. They've done more damage shooting themselves or getting involved in a robbery or getting involved in an alleged drive-by shooting just the other night in not too far from where I live. There was a shootout. Three people were injured. The alleged victim got shot in the leg. He went to the hospital.
Yeah, it's and if we take Chicago, for instance, as a case in point, the innocent bystanders to this stuff are also... a horrifying end result. But again, I think you rightly point out these are law enforcement problems, not warfare problems.
Right. I mean, you have a lot of guys here who romanticize and fantasize, but when it comes down to down home killing, all right, wholesale killing, put them out in a place in Syria or Somalia, anywhere where there's a hot war, that's where you're going to see real killing. The average American isn't prepared for that. There hasn't been a real shooting war from a foreign enemy on these shores since the War of 1812.
Right.
If an average American saw what actual warfare looks like, what the damage is, what real shock and awe looks like, or what the South used to look like after Sherman got through with it, they wouldn't be so hot to do it.
I think there's a great element of truth in that, Angelo. However, having grown up in the South, I think Jim would probably echo what I'm about to say. There are a lot of people who are deluded into. I mean, they've been deluded with the Lost Cause mythology. Oh, it's disgusting.
Oh well.
But you know, Noam Chomsky made a similar observation to what you just said a few minutes ago when he said that. And I don't think he was trying to be unsympathetic or heartless or anything like that. But when he said that what America witnessed in Boston a couple of weeks ago is something that the rest of the world witnesses in many parts of it on a routine basis.
Agreed. There's a lot of truth in that. But let's take the romanticism out of it. Anytime I get, and I do run into him on occasion, the Lost Cause guy or the instance of, well, the South was, the Civil War was all about states' rights.
And economics.
And economics. I say no. And I can prove it demonstrably. Ever hear of a guy named Stevens?
Alexander?
Alexander Stevens.
Yeah, yes. Little tiny guy.
Yep. Ever hear of his cornerstone speech?
Yes, absolutely. Slavery is the cornerstone of the Confederacy.
Absolutely. Right.
Well, they said it in their Confederate Declaration of Independence, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I keep quoting them the first line, one of the lines out of there. The new Constitution has put to rest forever the agitating questions relating to our peculiar institutions. African slavery as it exists among us, the proper status of the Negro in our form of civilization. This is the immediate cause of the late rupture and present resolution, so on and so forth.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but...
Well, and John C. Calhoun, even prior to Alexander Stevens, went even further, because you'll recall it was John C. Calhoun, the father, by the way, of nullification,
yep,
who said slavery is not only, how did he put it? It's not only acceptable, it is a social good.
Yes. Yes. But that's the history that a lot of Southerners and a whole lot of Northerners don't know about. I can't speak for the South. You're much more up on it than I ever will be. But that's what's got to be brought. That's what's going to be brought out every time. Every opportunity I try to bring that out, it will always be about slavery. And now, in terms of demographics, I don't even know how they're going to pull this war off, since a vast majority of black people live in the South. There's more, the same basically the same population that migrated from the south to the north in the early part of the 20th century have migrated back.
I didn't know that.
Yes. You've got more former New Yorkers living in the south than you have in the north at all. It's a great, it's the reverse of the Great Migration. I point you out to a website called blackdemographics.com, and it shows the black population in terms of each state. You've got a whole lot of black folks living in the south again. As a matter of fact, I'm only 5 years away from retirement, and most of my family is back in Atlanta, where my grandmother left 100 years ago.
Wow.
Right. So if anything's going to jump up, I don't know how it's going to jump up unless the new reenactors of the Confederacy are going to look a little bit like me with a suntan.
Well, that's tonight's toaster comment, Angelo. No doubt about it. You get the toaster. Kevin just wrote in. He said, tell Angelo they already have more than enough bullets. They've been saving up for the rising up.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they're hoarding. But again, I don't... When I talk like that, I'm concerned about individual killers.
Yes.
Who are being empowered by these 70,000 freaks sitting in Houston even as we speak. And I don't mind calling them freaks because I'm pretty sure they are.
Yes.
But secondarily, they did learn a lesson. You know, they've learned, as much as they would probably deny it, they've learned the lesson of Marx. I was talking with one of my dear friends earlier today. And he said, you know, Marx said what you do is you destabilize the situation, and when the situation collapses, you step into it with the best organization. And frankly, we could do 3 hours of conversation, Angelo, over the fact that that's exactly what's going on. The right wing, even though they're... I'm not going to say it. Even though they are nasty, the nasty little fascists that they are, have the better organization. And our side, in large part, is still walking around singing Kumbaya.
I agree. That I agree. But I hold out this piece of hope that they may be very well organized, but they're so spread out and so few, because mind you, the demographics are against them. If anything's going to jump off, it better jump off real quick. Or else, to be honest with you,
The Becks and the Limbaughs and the Hannitys and the like are doing all they can to get it started. I have no hesitation whatsoever in saying that. Secondarily, when we take into account the voter suppression and the gerrymandering, this too is a part of the conversation I had earlier today. You know, I get the creeping horrors when I realize that the first chance we have to begin to rehabilitate our idea of responsive government is January of 2023. I'll be 60.
I'll be right behind you.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that just? I mean, that's that. Well, I'm not going to say depressing, but it certainly is sobering.
Well, we have our work cut out ahead of us. But then again, Bob, I'll put it this way: people have learned their lessons also. And to be honest with you, maybe some sobering food for thought. Maybe the next time Sherman comes around, he burns it down, and this time they don't let it get built back up.
There's that. There's
right.
That. Angelo, a wonderful conversation. Thank you very much.
Right,
I appreciate the call. Hope we'll hear from you again soon.
Have a good weekend.
All right, you too.
Bye.
Bye now. Angelo calling from New York. It's from the Bronx. I share something in common with Angelo. I come from a place that begins with the. I think there's only, two places, the Bronx and the Shoals, that begin with the in the U.S. Maybe I'm wrong. Somebody will send me an email. Hey, listen, a quick favor, if I could ask it of you. Angelo calling from the Bronx reminded me, if you happen to live in the 7th Congressional District of New York, I have a favor to ask. Your congresswoman would be Nydia Velazquez. Velasquez, shoot me a note. I'd appreciate it. If Nydia Velasquez is your congresswoman, shoot me a note. BobKincaid@gmail.com. Nothing secret or anything like that, but the AIC team needs a little bit of your help. 7th District, 7th Congressional District of New York, Nydia Velazquez. Thank you. And thanks also go out to everybody, Karen and Luta and Janie and Ed and James and Marty and Jay from last night for helping us pick up the slack toward the end of the week. It is definitely and seriously and sincerely appreciated. Any help over the weekend is welcome as well, because we're catching up with what we didn't do in April. We didn't beat the Swede, and he was rather counting on us doing so. Thanks also to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie, Sparky, and Texas Betsy in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks, of course, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. Even if you're not at New York's 7th Congressional District, get out there and contact your elected representative and tell them you want them to sign on to the AIC Act and help us bring about a modicum of justice in Appalachia. AIC Act, AICHEACT.ORG. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Y'all have a great weekend. Rick Smith is next on the Horn.